And we shall wonder if one day our game is played on the other planets. We will have interplanetary competition.
Your job now is to stand by our new manager.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
If my granny had bought, you'd be the granddad.
Big Sam Aladicio, that's right.
The Irish Independent's Dan McDonald has been with us all evening and continues on into this football show. Interesting news there. Sigurdsson goes to Everton, £45 million.
Yeah, that is. I mean, what does 45 million mean anymore? Like, you're trying to figure out, normally you hear that figure and you sort of apply some kind of ability level to the player with that. Is that the new 20 million?
I know. We've had this discussion a few times. Like, you really knew when Alan Shearer was £15 million or Andy Cole was £7 million.
That has a context.
Talking about. Yeah. And really for a large part of this century, you knew what a £15 million player was, what a £25 million player was. But yeah, it's been blown wide open. A few financial groups I was reading in various newspapers now have pretty confidently predicted, and it just seems a scary thought, but I guess football inflation is at a kilter with normal inflation. But they do think 100 million euro transfer fees will be pretty much the norm in the top European leagues by 2020.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that assessment.
Yeah.
You know, and it's strange though, because the drip down doesn't necessarily go all the way down the food chain just yet. I know there's big money going around the championship, but yet you'd also have teams in the championship who would be very reluctant to pay fees of any great substance. You know, we talk about the likes of Preston and so on, and you know the money they're dealing with is very small in comparison. You're still paying 100 grand for some players, and yet you're trying to get into a league where this is now. I mean, Sigurdsson's a very good player, and he will definitely, you know, he can play at that level. Like, there's certain guarantees, the security that comes with him. You know, he's used to the country, to the league. You know, he's, I guess in that respect, it doesn't seem as outlandish as some other fees you'd hear discussion about.
Yeah.
And Everton are trying to bridge the gap. So a team that's just trying to get into that top six probably has to spend over the odds to get there anyway.
Yeah, there's mostly a lot of new television hours to be filled on Sky Sports Premier League. And one of the ways they're doing it is with The Debate. I don't know if you've seen much of The Debate.
I saw there was one with Redknapp and Carragher last week. They were talking about
the first one.
Yeah, that was the first one, was it? Yeah, so, yeah.
It's fine. I mean, it's okay. I thought it struggled a bit in its first week, just visually, because they had nothing really to analyse. But I watched the Monday Night Football version of The Debate last night. And it wasn't bad. Thierry Henry and Jamie Carragher.
Need to get a bit of bang for the buck with Thierry.
They had a lot of footage. He did a very good piece in Lacazette and also Xhaka's inability to find him or see him. So numerous occasions where Lacazette was making really good runs off the shoulder and the Leicester defence was quite high. So there was a lovely amount of room to clip the ball into Xhaka under no pressure in midfield. And Henry was almost likening it to Emmanuel Petit in his day. Just had that lovely left foot, the dink went over the top. And it just seemed Xhaka, he either wasn't seeing Lacazette or he didn't want to risk losing the ball. So instead he just gave the ball sideways.
Safe.
And there were numerous times where Lacazette was turning around, kind of going, hands spread, what's going on here? And Henry was saying, look, Xhaka needs to up it a bit and needs to start seeing him and start, you know, playing with a bit more risk instead of all this pretty football. But anyway, that's a tangent. Jamie Carragher was doing a big piece on Rooney and his point was, yeah, look, they could take Sigurdsson for sure, but Rooney's not really going to be able to play every game, and certainly not every game as a number nine. And in the absence of Lukaku, they really need a good number nine if they were signing a player. That was his take. But anyway, that's a slight tangent. So this evening we have a few things to talk about. We'll have Kenny Cunningham, who's watching the Liverpool game, join us. Before Kenny, although it's certainly something we might ask Kenny about, we'll talk to him about tackling. And this has come up because Julian Nagelsmann, who's the Hoffenheim coach, currently 1-0 down to Liverpool on 68 minutes. But Julian Nagelsmann, the Hoffenheim coach, seems like an impressive young man.
30.
He was appointed when he was 28 years old, when Hoffenheim were in the relegation zone 2 years ago, and he did a fantastic job. Five players in the Hoffenheim squad were older than him, but he got the club. They were 7 points adrift of safety, and he got them out of trouble, and now they're in a Champions League qualifier against Liverpool. And, I mean, interesting on a number of fronts. There's a great piece in The Guardian today about him.
Yeah, really interesting piece, Marcus Christensen piece. And just, I mean, an element of it was going through previous interviews that he's given. Mm. But I guess, you know, for the English audience now tuning in to what he's doing,
yeah.
It is fascinating. I mean, I suppose you have to look beyond the age. Just the age in itself is just a novelty. And maybe as football changes, we'll need to become less shocked by this seeming revolution, you know, that certainly in certain countries they seem willing to appoint the younger managers. Now, maybe it's a case that they end up coming to, say, the Premier League when they're 35, 36, because, I mean, Phyllis Boas started very young, didn't have a playing career. I mean, there are guys from this model. He was just exceptionally young and he was given the opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, like it covers quite a bit. I mean, there is this bit of tackling. There's also a bit about how he went in as a young man to a dressing room with five players older than him, but it actually commanded their respect by putting on good training sessions.
Yeah.
And by doing things that maybe a bad dressing room might have, you know, sniggered about and almost, you know, found some kind of weakness in it, that this guy's coming in with his highfalutin ideas. But actually, it seems like every training session was demanding and challenging for players.
Nagelsmann was a promising enough footballer, it seemed, and then persistent injuries meant he knocked his football career on the head. And 25-year-old, he got in as a scout for a team, then Hoffenheim 2010, their under-17 coach, then under-19s, then he got appointed. Does like some of the training stuff Dan's talking about, he's got a huge 6 metres by 3 metres screen. 6 metres by 3 metres on the halfway line. Four cameras film all the training, two of them from towers. And when he spots something he doesn't like, he stops training, rewinds the offending clip on his iPad on the screen and points out what he wants the team to do. And he seems to be a tinkers with formations all the time. Like in 14 games, he played the same formation just twice out of 16 games. So, 14 games that kept Hoffenheim up in 2015-16. They lined up with the same tactic three times. So, three times in 14 games, the same tactics. So, seems to be pushing the players. Really interesting guy. Like he said, for instance, football is actually pretty limited. There are only really four phases. One, when you have the ball. Two, when the opponent has the ball. Three, when you win the ball. Four, when you lose the ball. That's football, really. There isn't more to it, I guess.
It's a simple philosophy.
Point, yeah. And so the tackling point, which kind of grabbed us and has been talked about all day, Gary Lineker on Twitter, a few others. "I'm not too keen on tackles," said Nagelsmann. "I much prefer us to win the ball by pressurising the opponent into a mistake, that we cut off his angles so that he makes a mistake when he tries to find a teammate with a difficult pass. And then we get the ball. We need to be quick in order to be able to create a chance. And then it's better that the player is fresher when he hasn't had to make five tackles before starting an attack." So kind of an interesting one. And it seems Guardiola was of a similar mindset, and he felt there were almost too many variables in a tackle. You could give away a free. You could miss the tackle and be out of the game. The ball could ricochet off a shin and bounce anywhere, and suddenly you're the superior team and you're caught unawares, and it's leaving things to chance almost.
Yeah, but again, you are replacing that with basically your pressing, with your energy, with your fitness. And it says a lot about the personality of the team that he needs to have for this philosophy to be adopted.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that he's gone in at a high level of the game, at a Bundesliga club. I mean, if he was a coach that was starting his career at a League Two side, say, you know, how hard is it to introduce that there?
Yeah.
When you're dealing with players who may not have the attributes to sort of implement that style. So he probably has skipped an element of your education to get to this level. But he's, you know, he makes a compelling point. I think Gary Lineker obviously agreed with him, you know, made the point that in this, again, this part of the world, there's far too much emphasis on the brawn as opposed to the brain.
Lineker said this this obsession with the hard tackling, with getting your shorts dirty, has held the game back. It has held the British game back as opposed to the more technical continental one.
Yeah, and I can see his argument. We can apply it to Ireland as well.
Xabi Alonso tweeted, "How often has Busquets tackled?" So, like, this is not just some. It's not just Nagelsmann who's thought this clearly for a while. Alonso was making the point that you only tackle when you absolutely have to. He was saying, "Look at Busquets; rarely, if ever, tackled." Maldini, the famous old quote: "If you have to tackle, you've made a mistake." So it seems like Nagelsmann's trying to take that to a certain extreme. So we have Lee Carsley on the show, who's obviously worked at the Manchester City Academy up until fairly recently. I'm curious to know what tough tackling Lee Carsley makes of all this.
Well, and where does it stand now? But even if he's working at Birmingham now, is there a different, you know, different mentality even as you drop
get
down.
Stuck in.
As you drop down. Well, I mean, that is still deemed to be part of the game. Although another thing is actually just seems to be harder to tackle now anyway without going sort of misty-eyed about it. The grades of tackle that can get you into serious bother now. I mean, there's a pragmatism about encouraging your players not to be diving into tackles either.
Yeah. Xabi Alonso, I didn't refuse the tackle, but it's last resort. How many times does Busquets tackle? He's so ahead of the game he doesn't need to. It's last resort. But it isn't a quality to aspire to.
Other words.
Now, that tackling wouldn't be a quality to aspire to. That is not what's going on in football in this country, I can't think. I mean, we still love a tackle.
I mean, we demand it.
We demand
it. If there isn't one, there's a sort of an assumption of some kind of weakness or fragility. But then sometimes you do wonder, is our approach to football always heavily coloured by our other sports that we play, where physicality is a big part of it?
Can rip off helmets and stuff.
Rip off helmets, or you walk onto the pitch and you shove someone straight away, like you shove your marker, and that's part of our sporting culture in other ways, I guess. Our football is different as Liverpool go 2-0 up.
Wow. James Milner, who's older than Nagelsmann. Who, by the way, where's your tackling now, Nagelsmann? Why don't you tackle James Milner?
Yeah, clearly there's an element of
James Milner
freedom from as he scored.
Has put in a cross, and it was either deflected in as an own goal, or he sliced the cross with his left foot from the left-hand side, and it went directly in. Jurgen Klopp's looking on, slightly confused, really. Odd reaction from Klopp. 75 minutes on the clock. Hoffenheim 0, Liverpool 2. I mean, this is kind of Liverpool into the Champions League now.
That missed penalty is the key moment. Actually, there was a tackle from a player trying to halt the game, and there was a quick free kick taken. It's interesting. Klopp actually did say beforehand he expected a lot of tactical fouls from Hoffenheim, more so to interrupt the rhythm of a side. So they're still not afraid to foul to slow things down. Mm. But it was a quick break, and then Milner's curled it with his right foot.
Yeah, it took a slight deflection. Very slight off the chest of the Hoffenheim player. So Milner had so much time, he cut back onto his right foot and tried to curl one to the far stick. And it wasn't going in, certainly, and it took a nick off
retreating
Hoffenheim defender. Yeah, definitely a cross. And it's actually quite unlucky. I mean, it was a perfect deflection to nestle into the top right-hand corner. Either way, that's two away goals, 15 minutes to go. Liverpool fans in the Champions League, Dan.
Great position. I mean, we'll speak to Kenny, obviously, about the flow again, because they've been lucky at times, and they've had a few let-offs in this game. The dreadful penalty is the obvious one, but there was a big chance before half-time. So I don't know if it necessarily answers some of the questions about Liverpool arising from the weekend.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, this is a high-pressure match. I mean, if Arnold's goal gets them through, I mean, they've paid for the whole cost of their academy over the last few years, if a young player can do that.
Let's get through some stuff before we talk to Lee Carsley and Kenny. So Scott Hogan is the news of the day, now at Aston Villa. First really came to prominence at Brentford. Scott Hogan has finally decided to play international football for Ireland after face-to-face talks with Martin O'Neill. So he's not in the squad for the upcoming games. Will probably be in the next squad, said O'Neill. This was revealed at the press conference yesterday. O'Neill, and I suppose the FAI at large, wanted something of an embargo so that it didn't detract from the Sean Maguire news.
Well, no, I think it was more, I don't know if there was any plan.
I saw a quote from O'Neill saying, I want it today to be about Sean Maguire.
Yeah, that was the case. Oh. But it was just, it was in the course of the newspaper discussion afterwards. It wasn't sort of embargoed by the FAI. It just so happened to be in the newspaper chat that there was a discussion about Maguire, and just it almost came up in passing. There's the boy Hogan, a fella who seems like he wants to play for us. It's like, whoa, wait a minute, this is a development, and all the questions then came to be about Hogan. And Hogan, one that I think maybe people have possibly given up on. I've been fairly sceptical about the progress of this one.
He's 24 years old. He qualifies for Ireland through the grandparent
rule. He's from Salford.
It seemed like approaches or inquiries had been made to Hogan in the past, and he had said, I'm going to put a hold on these. Do we know exactly what was said?
Well, Hogan was called up when he was at under-21 level at Rochdale. The club needed him. It was never processed. That's why the paperwork hasn't gone through. Then he came to prominence because he had two long-term injuries, came back from a second one at Brentford and scored an outrageous amount of goals, something like 15 in 15 games or something like that. At that point, there was interest. I know that around that point, he did a pretty high-profile interview in an English newspaper where I think his representatives were keen, I think, at the time to maybe tone down the Irish stuff and maybe tone up, could this be another Vardy?
Yeah.
And at that point, you felt maybe this one is slipping away a bit because it looked like he was going to go to the Premier League and go to West Ham. Now, in fairness to Martin Neil, these points were put to him yesterday. And he did say, fairly honestly, OK, maybe his head was turned a bit. This is not direct quotes, but sort of the general tone. That maybe his head was turned a bit. And that he wouldn't be the first player to play for Ireland who may have wanted to play for England first. Mm. But he also said that when he met him, he wanted to get the right vibes and enthusiasm off him because he is a very good dressing room, he feels, in the Ireland camp. And he just wouldn't want to bring someone in who looks like there's a blatant opportunism about what they're doing. He said he got good vibes from him, that Hogan says that genuinely one of the initial reasons given that he didn't come in was he had had a big long injury break and that he needed the international breaks to recuperate.
Right.
And I do know, I mean, he's very good friends with John Egan, who's in the Ireland squad at the moment. It was time at Brentford. I think they went off to a Conor McGregor fight together at one point in one of the breaks. He's at Villa now with Glenn Whelan and Conor Hur in two.
Did you say that disapprovingly?
Well, no. They went off on a break together. I mean, teammates, you know, they don't necessarily want to spend time together away from the game.
Mm-hmm. You know? No, it was the Conor McGregor aspect that I thought...
I think that hinting at your own feelings towards... Well, I mean, wouldn't be how I would spend 4 days off in the middle of a club season if I was. But anyway, the point is, Hogan said he needed to rehabilitate from his injuries. And O'Neill is saying, listen, yes, he may have had his head turned slightly. He said it didn't come from the players, so maybe is that hinting at agent and third parties being busy, which were certainly involved in other previous cases. But he felt that he got the right vibe from him. I mean, it was Hogan who approached him this time.
Right.
The key thing. It wasn't O'Neill going back to Hogan. Hogan approached him through his agent and said, actually, I want to meet. I want to come in. So I think that's been taken as a positive sign about his intentions.
Well, it was certainly something Grealish didn't seem to do. Now, look, you can be incredibly cynical about this and you can say Hogan didn't get the move to the Premier League, realised England was increasingly unlikely and said, right, Ireland's my way and I'm going to meet with Martin O'Neill and make sure it happens. If that's what's happened, and I don't know if that's what's happened, once he comes in and shows the right attitude and has a genuine affection for playing for the country, and you know the grandparent rule is obviously a well-worn tradition, it's fine. We live with that. You know, that's he won't be the first. He certainly wasn't the first. He won't be the last.
No, but it's not as if he's gone from Brentford to Barnsley either. I mean, he's gone to Villa in a deal that's could be worth $15 million.
Yeah.
And he's 24. So okay, Villa have started season poorly, but there's still an expectation they could go up. He'll be a Premier League player potentially in 12 months' time, 25 years of age,
okay,
with a good profile.
But then you would get into the England squad.
Well, potentially. Yeah. So I think by coming now, he's made a good move. There was also a point as well, I think his idol when he was younger was Roy Keane, and they always felt that would be, that Keane could be a big part of the... Now, there's no suggestion that he has been, by the way.
Mm.
But I take your point. I understand the cynicism. It's going to be there because he didn't take the call straight away, and you would like someone to take the call straight away. But I do think if he comes in with the right approach and mindset, and I don't think O'Neill would just let... would be flippant about it. He has had an attitude throughout his time here that he doesn't want to just throw around caps cheaply for no reason. And
the point about contaminating a very good dressing room is also a good one, I think.
I think the players would see through it if his attitude was pretty crappy, you know.
Yeah.
And I would assume as well the fact that, you know, there's Whelan and Hurt in there, O'Neill has the facility to, you know, find out what this fella's about.
And I'm
guessing it's all part of it. But look, it's a problem position, the striker. You know, all our other options are pretty much, with the exception of Neil Maguire and Hogan, are the other side of 30. And O'Neill has a bit of a responsibility as well to make sure that the next guy, whoever it is, has players there. And if getting Hogan tied down as a job, that's, you know, that could help us over the next decade, then I think all the evidence suggests we're going to need him.
I just want to... mention as well, there's a piece on the Telegraph, it's in the back page of the Independent as well, which is just worth a quick mention, that Manchester City seem very keen on Sanchez, and it's Matt Law who says that Guardiola trying to tempt Arsenal with a bid of around £60 million, obviously Sanchez into the last 12 months of his contract. They're also prepared to hand Sanchez a contract worth €440,000, including bonuses and image rights, per week. €440,000 per week for Sanchez is where they're willing to go.
Again, this doesn't shock me anymore.
I know, but it doesn't shock me, but it's just worth mentioning. I watched City at the weekend against Brighton. It was kind of a training exercise. Brighton just did not want to go near the football. They didn't have any pace in their team, so they couldn't hit City on the counter-attack. It was like 80-something percent possession. The two times Brighton got the ball, City scored. It was that kind of a game. So you didn't learn a whole lot about them they'll need Mendy at left back because Danilo is very right footed and did not want to be there on the old left foot. So there's not too much you could take from the City result.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if they did get Sanchez, and maybe, I mean, there's PSG talk, even though they've signed Neymar and other clubs have been mentioned, but it would be interesting if they brought in Sanchez. Where would they plan to accommodate him?
Yeah.
Because obviously there was all this debate last year over Aguero in the context of Jesus being there, and was his style more in keeping with Guardiola's approach?
Yeah.
Okay, then you've got De Bruyne to fit in, Sané, all the attacking talent they have. I mean, okay, Sanchez, you could see a front three, you know, with Sanchez being wide, and you know, you can see how would that fit into Pep's way of doing things. But I mean, it would give you sort of an outrageous array of options. But they are the club that can afford to do it. You know, there's no doubt they can afford the figures involved. There's no doubt in that.
Lads, your man Nagelsmann will get plenty of use out of his Jumbotron screen at training tomorrow. His non-tackling Hoffenheim side sure are giving away a lot of fouls, says Mark.
He's tapping away on his iPad mid-game here now.
I knew this morning when I saw this brilliant piece on Nagelsmann, and I said, we should absolutely talk about this. And you know what? Let's go one step further. Let's ring up Lee Carsley and Kenny Cunningham and get them to talk about the tackling aspect. That this was going to happen.
That's sneer comes down, doesn't it?
They're going to lose 2-0 and they'll tackle all night. Anyway, so we'll get on to the lads in just a moment. There's a few other bits and pieces we wanted to touch on. You're going to have to sell this one to me, Dan. It's about Paulinho moving to Barcelona from China.
Well, the point is that I think it's just a transfer that Barcelona have signed Paulinho. The world has gone mad because we obviously see things just solely through the eyes of someone's Premier League career. So he was at Spurs. He wasn't very good. And now suddenly a couple of years, really? Oh, okay. Well, I mean, yeah, he was there from 2013 to 2015. Midfield player. Brazilian.
No.
Okay. Well, he didn't necessarily leave a huge impact on his time there. But I mean, I can confirm he was at the club.
Okay.
This is not a ruse.
Right. Okay.
But the response to his transfer has been shock. You know, merit almost. How could this player suddenly? It's like, you know, players leave the Premier League and go elsewhere. Someone like Iago Aspas or something. Then you hear he's doing very well in Spain. It's like, what? He was brutal at Liverpool. How could this be?
Diego Forlán.
Diego Forlán. Forgetting that, I mean, it's not just the be all and end all of life, how you do in the Premier League. Anyway, he's gone to China, and a couple of years later, he's got to move to Barcelona.
Well, that does seem an unusual route there.
It is an unusual route.
What's he doing in China that's impressed Barcelona?
Well, the thing is, I mean, the one thing I would point out, I mean, there's a 40 million release clause here, and I think Barcelona are maybe just desperate to get players in, and that clause is probably more affordable than what they're going to meet elsewhere with their Neymar money. But John Durden, a piece in The Guardian, who pointed out he's been in China, I think he's a reporter actually based over there, who was just stressed that actually over the last couple of years he's been better than any of the other imports. Any of the, you know, Jackson Martinez, okay, different position, Livetsi, any of the high profile players, better than Ramirez, better than Oscar.
Okay.
That his performance.
You forget Oscar's out there.
He's
in
out
China.
There. He's after.
What a waste.
He's getting an 8-match ban apparently for kicking the ball at two opponents during play, sparking a brawl. So
just imagine how frustrated Oscar is right now with his life.
Do you think?
I think so.
8-match ban. He's probably just in some plush hotel.
I think if you're Oscar, you're looking at the situation as European football, the financial side of it explodes, and you could be making so much money. Not on a par with what you're going to get in China, but you know, you could be making more money than when you left for China. And he must be thinking, I'm wasting my career here.
Potentially. Maybe in the 8-match ban, you're watching a lot of football.
He started a brawl.
Dan. He started abroad. He's angry.
Not happy.
But the point
Oscar.
Is. But he also makes the point in the piece that Paulinho hadn't been involved in international football since the 2014 World Cup. He was also there, Joe. You were there. You must remember Paulinho in some way. But he's got a recall into the international team. They've won all 8 games that he's been involved in since his return. He scored a hat-trick against Uruguay in March in a qualifier.
Yeah.
Like, he's been doing some pretty good things in the last 2 years. So the move maybe isn't as much of a shock to people outside England. You know, as it is within England and this neck of the woods. Now, I still think it's a strange one, but maybe it's not as preposterous. And you know, 40 million now is the new 10 million.
Well, that's true.
You know, so maybe it's not that much of a risk.
Nagelsmann's boys bite back 2-1. Hoffenheim have scored. It's a ball over the top, which could only have been rehearsed on a jumbo screen at training. It's a beautiful chest down, controlled. And it's buried. It's a really good finish. It's a fantastic goal.
It's a goal from Martin O'Neill's Ireland goal there.
Yeah.
Just get it up there.
It's a beautiful. I mean, we'll get the goal score in a minute, but I mean, it's a ball over the top. He chests it onto his left foot and then just catches it so sweetly, and he was under a bit of pressure. The ball was bouncing. He had to open up his body with the chest in and put it low and hard into the far corner. So 88 minutes on the clock, Hoffenheim 1, Liverpool 2. We will take a short break and we'll come back. We'll see if this tackling business is still going on at the Manchester City or in Birmingham academies with Lee Carsley. And then Kenny Cunningham, I'm sure, will have a thing or two to say about that. And he'll also tell us what he made of Liverpool tonight.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to AIR. Watch live and exclusive SSE Airtricity League action this month on AIR Sport.
Now you're welcome back. So it's Hoffenheim 1, Liverpool 2, 4 minutes of added time in Germany this evening. The latest in the Championship. We're coming up to the very end of these games, final few minutes. Barnsley 2-1 up on Notts Forest. Birmingham City 0-0 with Bolton. Brentford 2-1 up on Bristol City. Cardiff 2, Sheffield United 0, Derby County 1, Preston North End 0, Hull City 1, Wolves 2, Leeds and Fulham at Elland Road is 0-0, Middlesbrough are 2-0 up on Burton. It's Millwall 3, Mick McCarthy's Ipswich Town 4, champagne football.
Ipswich
there
are having a very good start to the season.
Okay.
And
we've just been talking about Scott Hogan. It's Reading 2, Aston Villa 0.
Glenn Whelan own goal set Reading on their way there.
Okay.
So Martin Neal watching Hogan went off injured in the first half.
Okay. So that's where we are. Hoffenheim 1, Liverpool 2. We've got Lee Carsley on the line, who's was at Manchester City Academy up until recently and is now part of the under-23s league development coaching at Birmingham. Thanks for joining us, Lee. We figured we have Kenny Cunningham joining us in a few minutes, but we figured if you wanted to get a word in edgeways, we'd better give you a head start. No, you can stay on when he's on as well, but he just wouldn't give anyone else a chance to talk, so we decided to come to you first.
Do you want me to text you?
So we just saw something very interesting, and you're obviously working with some of the best coaches, with some of the best young players at academies, and it was a quote from Nagelsmann, who's obviously the Hoffenheim coach and doing incredibly well, not so well this evening. Just something which came up in a piece in The Guardian today, and he was talking about tackling, and it said, the piece said, he's got a lot in common with one of his role models, Pep Guardiola. He doesn't want his players to tackle too much. He says, there are too many unknown, I'm just going to read this out to the listeners and then you can give us your take. There are too many unknown quantities in tackles. The ball can fall here, fall there, take a bounce, go out for a throw-in, end up in an opposition player's feet. The referee can give a free kick to us or to our opponent. So no, I'm not keen in tackles. I prefer us to win the ball by pressurising the opponent into a mistake that we cut off his angles, and so that he makes a mistake when he tries to find one of his teammates with a difficult pass. Really interesting. Gary Lineker was all for this on Twitter today, saying, yes, 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 I've been saying this for years, and he felt it's almost held back British football, this obsession with the tackling. So you're that perfect blend of tough tackling midfielder in your day and now working in some of the best academies. So so give us your reaction. Really interesting debate.
Yeah, I think obviously what the coach is saying is that if positionally your team's in a good position when they're pressing, that they can win the ball back and win it cleanly by either forcing the opposition into a mistake or pressing the ball and intercepting, then obviously your team's in a better position to regain possession and then create an attack. Mm. Whereas I think he was trying to say that, you know, in England we tackle a lot. The crowd enjoy it, the tempo, the tackles, you know, sliding the ball out of play. You know, the player gets a clap for it, where in Europe it's frowned upon because you've gave away possession or you've created an opportunity for the opposition. So I think it's I can see what they're trying to say, and being in a position constantly, defensively, where you can win the ball back would mean that you're not obviously leaving the ground and intercepting more than tackling.
Mm. I mean, Lee, are the academies in the UK still stacked with tough tackling midfielders? Would you have been working with a couple at Manchester City, or is the modern player naturally different anyway?
Well, I think you know, obviously at Manchester City, we spent a lot of the time on the ball, so we didn't have to win it back a lot, to be honest, because the majority of the time we were in possession.
Mm.
So it is, in terms of the top academies, when you talk about trying to sign a player and profiling the player, probably one of the last things you look at as a midfielder is the tackling concepts. It's more the, you know, what's he like in possession? What's he like physically? You know, you never really mention tackling now. It's more interceptions, blocks, and things like that, rather than, you know, winning the ball back.
Right. Which is, What do you think of that? Even just the weekend just gone by, one of the Manchester United goals comes from Matic closing down a player and committing to a tackle and setting the breakaway for the goal in off the post for Lukaku.
Yeah.
I mean, are we really heading to a point at the very top level of the game where, I don't know, 10, 20 years, who knows, but we just won't really see any tackles?
I think with the way the game's going at the minute, you know, especially when you look at some of the red cards over the weekend, that, you know, what people are getting red cards for now, you'd get a warning for, five years ago. Whereas, I definitely think though there's still room in the team for someone that can specialise in regaining possession for the team, like a Kante, a Matic, these kind of players. All the top teams generally have a blend of midfielders where you've got one that's very attacking, one that's creative, and one that can win the ball back. So it's having that right balance.
Yeah. So you were over this Man City team, and Kev, who's not here tonight, went to watch them play a few times and just raved about them. I mean, just outrageous talent. And as you said, they keep the ball. Curious to know what the opposition teams did. Were they putting in tackles? Were they still trying to rough you up?
No. A lot of it was mainly zonal defending, creating a low block, getting back behind the ball, because they realised that as soon as one player made a tackle, you know, there were a man less. So we found that, you know, generally early in the game you'd get the odd tackle where they try and, you know, upset you and try and derail you a little bit, but that soon wore off. And now with the kind of protection that the players get from the referees, it's frowned upon now, tackling almost.
Right, that's very interesting. And as a City coach, or say going into those games, would you have preferred if more opposition players were trying to tackle you? Would that have opened the game up for you, or what was your general stance on it?
Well, with the way that we played, and what I'm trying to do at Birmingham at the minute is, you know, is almost provoke a reaction from the opposition, especially when you're attacking. You want one player, maybe two players, to jump and to try and make a decision to come and tackle you and come and press, and before you know it, hopefully, you know, you're through them, and then you're running at their back four. So it's playing with a little bit of patience and with a purpose that you are trying to go through. But it, like I say, it's that provoking pass where you're forcing someone to come out and try and get the ball.
Yeah. Kenny Cunningham's on the line. Evening, Kenny. It's been too long.
Not long enough for me and you, Joe.
So we've Lee Carsley on, and we're just talking about, I don't know, I presume you saw some of Nagelsmann's...
No better man if you're talking about tackling. No better man than Lee Carsley on the other end of the phone.
But you know, it's very interesting.
His passing range was on the right, though. We'll say that, very much so.
He knows his stuff.
I presume the lads mentioned to you we were going to talk about Nagelsmann's quotes about tackling. So you're up to speed on that. He doesn't like to see it anymore. Guardiola, maybe not a big fan of tackling. Feels like it introduces too many variables. And it seems like that's very much what's going on at youth level as well, Kenny. The days of tackling at top level football could really be numbered, it seems, if more coaches are thinking like this.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a bit confused, boy. You might have to give me a bit more detail.
Okay.
Detail on it, Joe, in all honesty.
I can read you the quote then.
It depends what kind of tackling you're talking about. If you're talking about 2 foot lunging, that speed towards an opponent, well, yeah, we all want to see the end of that.
Mm.
We know what's going to happen in those circumstances. If you're talking about using your intelligence and perfectly timing a tackle, sliding from the side with, you know, no chance of causing any injury, and, you know, taking the ball cleanly from an opponent, well, clearly that's never going to leave the game. So, not exactly sure what the argument is.
Lee, are we seeing those tackles still happening at an underage level?
The coach's point was he wants to put his team in a position defensively where they're able to create interceptions. He doesn't want his players selling themselves, so they're out of position. So that was basically what he was trying to say, Kenny.
Yeah, but that's always been the case, Lee. The coaches were preaching that to me 25 years ago when I first started the game. You know, read the game, back off, give yourself enough time. You're playing up against somebody with a better pace, give yourself a couple of yards start, don't go to ground, stay on your feet, all of those things. We're talking about the same things. I mean, this is...
But it definitely has changed, Kenny, no?
Well, the rules of the game have changed, absolutely. But if you're talking about you can't tackle, I mean, you can, to a certain extent, you can... Yourself on the football pitch, obviously, you can you know exactly where you're going to be. You know, you can put yourself in any other pitch where you want. You can't influence, to a certain extent, the man who's stood 15 yards to the right in terms of decision making he's going to make. And if for any reason he makes a poor decision and you've got to step out of your comfort zone, maybe give him a bit of cover, there might come a time when you maybe have to make a tackle, maybe to get your opponent out of jail. I'm thinking of, off the top of my head, to the Crystal Palace game at the weekend. Scott Dan playing a poor pass back to Fosu-Mensah. The ball gets cut out 1v1.
Yeah.
Fosu-Mensah, 5-10 yards, wrong side of his man, gets back. Wonderful last ditch tackle. Wasn't his fault. You know, he dug his partner out. It was a brilliant last ditch tackle. But it was a last ditch tackle. Now, if somebody's saying to me, oh, he's got that all wrong, he shouldn't be diving in there, he's doing something wrong if he has to make a last ditch tackle. Well,
Gary,
well, that's rubbish, obviously. Like, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
No, last-ditch tackle, for sure. Like, say, for instance, Gary Lineker's reaction to Nagelsmann saying he doesn't like to see his players tackling was, yes, 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 I've thought this forever. Tackling generally involves lunging in, ending up on your backside. Football hard enough to play on your feet, let alone
on your
arse.
Well,
I'd like
to ask the German manager, if the opposition player is 10 yards from goal about to pull the trigger and put it in the back of the net, and your last defender's in a position to make a tackle, potentially make contact with the ball and put it out for a corner, is he going to be preaching to his player, the last thing I want to do is see you make a tackle there, just step back and let the player have a shot on target?
Definitely tackle there, but I think it seems like...
I don't know, that's what I'm saying, it's ridiculous. We're going around in circles with it. I mean, I don't even understand it. I don't even understand what the man's saying.
Lee, let me put it in this way then. In comparison, when you were playing Premier League football 10 years ago, it seems like more and more managers would encourage their midfield players less to go and put a tackle in and more to just hold the line. It seems like we're moving away from get stuck in, get a few tackles in, and more towards let's play zonally, nobody step out, nobody get tempted almost.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like, when you know, I watch quite a bit of German football, and with the way that they press as well, it's almost like waiting for your opponent to make that mistake, you know, forcing an error and then being in a position where you can counter-attack. So,
but that's getting stuck in, Lee, isn't it? That's good play. When Joseph
gets... No, but I think
stuck,
what he's saying, Kenny, he's saying he doesn't want that. He doesn't want the contact. He just wants them to be in a position where the whole team's ready to win the ball back and force an error rather than, you know, you going and smashing someone. The ball can go anywhere.
We're all talking about the same thing. Yeah, you're right. I hear what you're saying, Lee. Absolutely right. We're splitting hairs, really, in what we're saying. Joe's saying getting stuck in. For me, when I visualise getting stuck in, I visualise my centre midfielder stepping out of that comfort zone, making up 10 yards quickly, without going to ground, actually making physical contact with the opposition player and stealing the ball off him.
So for me, that's getting
stuck in. He's not putting the last 20 feet in the air, but he's getting stuck in, winning back position, potentially setting up counter-attacking opportunities. So, I think we're all agreed the game's changed. You can't call yourself the tackles. Their studs exposed, but getting stuck in nowadays, it's a different mindset. Getting stuck in is getting close, it's making contact, it's being physically aggressive, most of the time it's staying on your feet, but there's still a physical element to the game. You still have to go and make contact with opposition players to win back possession of the football.
But you say in Lee's day, and certainly before, a midfielder to have a good slide tackle in his locker would be a really good attribute. Listening to you guys now, you can kind of get away without that now. You can go through a career very nicely without having to make a slide tackle.
No, that's ridiculous. You'll always have to make a slide tackle coming from the side of a player. To tackle with your laces as opposed to your studs. The slide tackle means...
The Ryan Giggs type, where he'd slide back and hook the ball away.
Exactly. You're scooping the ball away. That's a brilliantly timed tackle. You're never going to injure your opponent. If you look at the criteria now, the referees are assessing in terms of whether to give a player a yellow or red card. Say the Cahill tackle, say, at the weekend. It's always about reckless nature. Does he endanger an opponent? Red card is all about endangering the safety of an opponent. You slide in and scoop that ball out, and invariably you're leading with your laces. That's what's making contact with the opposition player. Even if you don't get the ball, you're never going to endanger the safety of an opponent.
Can I ask Lee this then? Based on what you're seeing in the academies, is that even that Ryan Giggs type tackle an endangered species going forward, Lee, or will we always have that?
No, I think we'll always have that. I think it's definitely a tackle that's used a lot with the fullbacks. In terms of, you know, when they're going to ground to block crosses, it's still an important game. It's something that we work on daily, you know, that importance of getting close, getting into a position where you can make a tackle. Obviously not diving in or not trying to injure anyone, but, you know, I think that the law, there's always going to be contact in the game, and it's just making sure that they're... Because we have to make sure that we don't take that mentality away from the players that, you know, that you're almost turning into 11, a team of 11 shadow boxers where they're just just out of range, that they'll never make a tackle or an interception. You need to be in that zone where you can win the ball back and be aggressive.
Kenny, is there any argument that a kind of obsession, or certainly a high value on the tough tackle, has held back the British game as opposed to the continental game?
I'm not sure it's held it back. I mean, the criteria has changed somewhat, I think, to a large extent for the better. But I think we've got to be careful. It makes me laugh sometimes when I hear Eden Hazard's probably a good example of the past couple of years. I hear people talking about, oh, he's been kicked out of the game. We've got to protect our more creative players. And I have to laugh because you cannot kick somebody off the game nowadays in football. You just can't do it. You're straight down the tunnel. So for me, taking away the physical nature of the game, that physical competitive, it's not the game that we know, that we all fell in love with. So I think we've got to be very careful. I think we're right on the borderline of it at the moment, that we don't go any further than we already have. Well, I think endangering the safety of home, I understand, and to some extent I agree with it. The Cahill tackle side of the weekend, yeah, I thought technically was a red card. You can argue whether it should be. In my opinion, it should change. But the criteria at this moment in time, in terms of the reckless nature of it, could it endanger a home? Yes, it could have done. He didn't make contact with the studs, but he could have done. So I've no problem with that. But I like the physical contact. And even, Conn, I think we have to encourage it. I think even as a coach, as Lee's a lot more experience than me as a coach, but that still needs to be encouraged. You can't sit 10 men behind the ball and be passive, because the better teams aren't going to give the ball back to you. The better teams will still play through you. Even with 10 players behind the ball, at some point you've got to be proactive and get the ball back. You've got to be aggressive, and you've got to go and press and put pressure on the person in possession of the ball and actually force mistake, rush them. And you can only do that by making up the ground quickly, getting close to, and to a certain extent making even the threat of some amount of physical contact to try and wrestle possession of the football. So you still got to be preaching that. Surely, I'd imagine the coaches at every academy in the country have still got to be preaching that, those kind of attributes to the young players, rather than just sit passive behind the ball and just wait for the ball to give them back to you. And poor players may very well give the ball back to you.
Yeah.
But the better players, the better teams, will keep the ball away from you. They'll throw you out mentally, they'll drain you, and eventually they'll play through you with the quality of their football. So,
yeah. Lee, final word to you on this. Are you seeing too many passive teams maybe against the likes of the Man Cities, or are you still seeing enough pressure on the ball?
No, you'd always want to see, you know, teams set up to come and try and win and try and get the ball back and try and dominate possession. And they're the kind of games that I like watching and like coaching in. And, you know, it's always better when a team comes to try and take something from the game rather than just hang on and hope for the best. It's, you know, I think there's too many coaches that put themselves first rather than the players. So,
yeah. Lee, thanks a million for joining us. Appreciate it. Best of luck with things at Birmingham. Thanks.
Thank you.
Cheers. That's Lee Carsey there. Kenny is still with us. Christ, Kenny must have been the debating team champion at St. Vincent's CBS back in Glasnevin, says Nick.
Never had one. Never had one.
You came on all guns firing there.
As well. He likes a good argument.
Desi Farrell.
Tag team, yeah. St. Vincent's. Desi could argue. Desi could argue as well. Missed a boat there.
Right, you and Cunningham and Farrell together. You came on there. You're like, what are we even talking about? This isn't even a debate. We almost had 10 minutes of airtime to fill there.
Yeah. No, I don't look at the tackling, etc. But this kind of big story breaking, I heard a few.
No, look, it's not.
I really couldn't understand.
Yeah,
it.
No, it's not big story breaking. But it was just an interesting insight. Here's a young coach doing very well on the continent, and really, just, you know, you got the impression he couldn't care less if he never sees his team tackle. Now, the last-ditch tackles for sure, but you almost got the impression he would just like his team to press the way we see teams pressing now as a unit without ever putting in a tackle and just wait for the opposition to be forced into a mistake. So an interception, effectively. And
well, I've never seen any team at any level enjoy any amount of small success without putting in a certain level of tackles, certain number of tackles, yeah, during the course. And like I said, it doesn't mean ending up on your backside. I think people have a vision ahead of tackling. People constantly sliding, exposing themselves, totally committing themselves to a tackle.
Yeah.
You know, the most of the tackles during the course of the game are done when people are on their feet, maybe just nicking things and maybe just toe-poking the ball away most of the time. So
yeah, like Matic, we referenced Matic's tackle to set up the Lukaku goal at the weekend. You watched a bit of this. You watched this Hoffenheim 1, Liverpool 2 game. Were Hoffenheim putting in tackles?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I thought so. They played well first half, actually. They're impressed. They've got a great home record there, haven't they? And they played like that, played with a lot of confidence. Liverpool played with themselves a little bit, had a great chance at the penalty, Kramaric didn't take it. But second half, Liverpool kind of bossed it. I think they'd be a bit frustrated, lads. You conceded the goal late on 2-0. The tie was over. Got a bit sloppy late on. Just a hopeful diagonal ball in and around their penalty box. And for once in the evening, probably Liverpool's best player, the young right back, Alexander Arnold, who was brilliant, really caught the eye. Just switched off for a minute. Didn't get around on the cover. I think it was Mark Uth, It was a brilliant finish into the bottom corner. Gives him kind of a glimmer of a chance, but now you'd expect Liverpool to be too strong. But on the evening, I think Klopp would be reasonably pleased. Wasn't perfect, but certainly job done, or should be.
Yeah, Kenny, just watching at the end, I think there might have been a Hoffenheim free kick. There was a guy with a free header headed over. In the context of the weekend and the Watford game and the discussion about Liverpool, was there the quality of their defending and defending of set pieces? I mean, did you see any encouragement tonight, or is that still a very live talking point in terms of their credentials going forward?
Well, it certainly would have been if they conceded that header that you spoke about. We really should have scored centre of the goal. Got far too much space, but I think it's probably an early. If you're looking at that Liverpool squad at the moment in terms of what needs potentially reinforcement between now and the end of the transfer window, we're all talking the same thing, potentially another centre-half coming in there, whether it's Van Dijk or somebody else. You've got plenty of numbers back there, lads, in terms of Matip, Lovren, Clavin, Gomez can play in there at a push, but a real kind of maybe dominant centre-half to really force with personality to knit the whole thing together. I still think they could do with that. Probably the weakest side of the defence was the left side. Moreno was a bit scatty as well, as he always is, but we know he's not going to play too many games. They've got good options there this season. I think even the performance of Alexander-Arnold tonight at right back, he was outstanding, lads. He really was. Looks as if he could even stay in the team.
Only 18.
Sorry?
18 years old.
Yeah, 18 years of age. Yeah, saw a bit of him play last year. Took the eye, but he looks as if he's grown in the summer. Great athlete. Very comfortable on his feet, good kind of dribbler. Like I said, maybe he made a mistake for this for the Hoffenheim goal, but I cut him a bit of slack on that. But it gives Liverpool another option there. But yeah, just at that centre-half position for me, and maybe even that centre-midfield one as well. Keita didn't come in. They're obviously looking to spend big money on him. So they're in good shape, got some really good options high up the pitch. Mane looked sharp again tonight. Firmino grew into the game. Salah had some good moments as well. So they're in good shape, heading in the right direction, but you still feel just maybe short in one or two areas to really be maybe serious title contenders.
Yeah, we're pretty much out of time. It was an interesting weekend of football for quite a few teams. We might talk to you next week after the weekend's games and see where we all stand. Spurs play Chelsea. There's some interesting games, and be curious to get your thoughts on Manchester United. But we are out of time. All I can finally say is it's obviously a delight to be talking to you again on a dark Tuesday.
Don't overdo it.
Are you delighted the football's back? Did you miss it?
Yeah, I did, to be honest. Yeah, I got a point during the summer. Yeah, I must admit, I was, how long? I did look at the calendar. I tried to stay clear of the pre-season games, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I try and stay clear of them and just stay away from it for a period of time. I think it serves me best. But yeah, by the time the games came around last weekend, yeah, I was really ready for it. I've got to be honest, really looking forward to it.
Okay, good stuff. Well, might talk to you next week and see how you think it's all shaping up. Thanks a million. Cheers.
I was disappointed you didn't ask Lee about his swinging elbow, whether that's still acceptable in the modern game. You let him off the hook there.
Good luck.
Take care,
Kelly Cunningham there, who probably had a swinging elbow in his day as well. The answer, of course, to our competition was Barry McGuigan. Paul Tully, you got that right. You've won a €600 one for all voucher. And remember, giving blood saves lives, so consider becoming a blood donor. See giveblood.ie to find your local clinic and follow #missingtype. Dan McDonald from the Irish Independent. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Joe.
Good show tomorrow. I'm not going to jinx it by saying what guests we have on, because they might pull out, but we have good guests on. Good luck.
Give him a ball and he out of grass. He'll give you a move for the perfect pass.
A swift message from VHI Swiftcare. From September 1st, our clinic's